gold-plated diapers.
Hey guys, it's me, Lucas, with
Matt Buckley
here on
Flapdoodle Forum.
First time we've done something like that.
Yeah, a little different. I kind of like that. Maybe we should do that from now on.
So,
really cool episode tonight.
Yeah?
Two stories each, and we're ready to go.
We're ready to go.
Got something good.
Fortunately, we've broken the cycle, and there is no Bubba tonight.
We had a really good pattern going on for a while there. I mean, alternating from the Bubba episodes to just you and me.
Yeah, I know. I like it when Bubba shows up.
Bubba is currently unavailable. He's got something going on with his filming schedule or shooting schedule, and he's got a business trip next week, so he's unable to join us.
Is that business trip related to what he's doing right now?
Why are we talking like this?
I don't know.
The business trip, I think he's going somewhere to shoot something. It's a different thing than what he's doing now. So it's
unrelated. Is it for that editing job?
I don't know. I think so.
All right. Yeah, fine.
But yeah, so we are bubbleless tonight, but that's okay because we got a really good show lined up for you.
Yeah, man. All right. So
Lucas, you want to start us off?
All right.
This
so,
is the point where you're going to want to click the video link, probably. Is it?
Well, I'll read the description first. This
okay.
is a short thing, and then I will do it. All okay. right. Alaska Town's cat mayor, feline mayor, is the cat's pajamas. This is from Huffington Post. The mayor of Sleepy Alaska Town is feline fine. The part minx cat clawed his way into political scene of Talkeetna, Alaska, through a write-in campaign shortly after he was born 15 years ago.
Okay.
So not only is he mayor, he's an old cat. Although his position is honorary, Stubbs' popularity is real. His election earned him enough press to catapult the town at the base of Mount McKinley into a tourist destination.
Got a cat as a mayor.
Residents say they're happy that their stubby-tailed mayor is promoting tourism. The general store where Stubbs hangs out says gets a dozen of tourists a day asking.
Dozen tourists a day? Yeah. Oh, dozens of tourists.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
All right, so I'm going to click the video, so you guys do the same.
All right, and I'm going to watch it.
All right, we're back, guys.
Okay, that was certainly interesting. So what do you make of that?
I think it's... Do you think... You know, they probably have, like, a town councilman or something like that.
Yeah.
But I guess maybe they used to have... Like, all right, so... And it says he's been mayor for 15 years. So 15 years ago, there was a write-in, and this cat won.
Yep.
Which means that they were actually electing real mayors for a while.
Uh-huh.
Until then.
It seems like kind of a publicity stunt, but it also seems like it's the actions of a town that's just kind of fed up with, like, traditional politics. They want to, like,
yeah,
do something crazy.
Yeah, I wonder if, like... Their mayors were just crap, and the guys that ran for it, people neither one liked.
Right.
And so they were just like,
let's elect a cat.
Let's elect Stubbs. Stubbs the cat. And
that'll show him.
And it's worked out for him so far.
It seems like it.
Yeah, man. There's some others. I wish I could remember what they were. But there's been other towns since this happened.
I've heard, like, I think a while ago, like, a dog got elected mayor somewhere. Now, are there any, like, legal stipulations or, like, rules regarding this, like, if someone were to hold, like, a political post, they have to be human or able to act in that post? I mean, it just seems a little ludicrous to me. Like, to put an animal in a position of power that obviously it's not going to be fit to act in.
Well, I guess it would have to do with the local law of that town.
So it's up to the local jurisdiction or
whatever?
Yeah.
What probably happened is the cat won, so then... You know, the town council probably passed an ordinance saying the mayor is now an honorary position, now we have a town councilman or something.
Let's see if we can get your cat Pippi elected to run Clifton Park.
Yeah,
you think
everybody
make that a write-in campaign for this election?
The next election for do we have a mayor?
Oh, I've never really heard of a mayor of this town.
I think we might just have
a supervisor or something.
Town supervisor, or something like that.
Let's see if we can
Pippi for town supervisor, Clifton Park.
Put up the signs. You know, we could be the media coordinators.
That'd Yesterday, cool. My dad asked me to take the cat.
Really?
Yeah, at least until my sister is done with college.
He doesn't want to deal with it anymore?
Well, at his new place, there's already three cats and the dog.
Right.
So he's afraid the cat's going to...
Oh.
So maybe the answer...
Pippi's a good cat, though.
So maybe it's a good time to elect her. Yeah, good time.
I think she would do well in that position.
It's time for another one.
Ready to switch it up?
All right.
So this story that I have for our next little segment isn't really meant to blow you all away, although figuratively the title might. But it's just kind of like a nice little distraction thing. It's kind of interesting. So at this point in the show, I'm going to advise you to click the link for this part, which is going to be about nuclear explosion art. Basically, what this guy did, and this story is from dailymail.co.uk, by the way, which I get a lot of my stories from.
Yeah.
This guy in Los Angeles, Clay Lipsky, he's a graphic artist, and he has a really interesting...
this is not our first art...
Yeah, like we tend to have art-themed stories a lot, and this is another little showcase. This guy, he did a series of artwork where he took pictures of tourists kind of admiring like a backdrop or like a scenic landscape or something, and he juxtaposed pictures of nuclear explosions going on in the background.
Uh-huh.
And it's really cool, these pictures that he made. So it's like a person taking in like a breathtaking scene,
mm-hmm.
and kind of just looking either stoically or like amusedly at these explosions going on in the background. This first one here, Luke, if you want to take a look, this guy is just standing on like a rocky shore,
uh-huh.
kind of contemplatively staring at this huge explosion going on in the water.
Yeah, that's cool.
Now, the whole aim of this guy's particular series of images here is to show what it would be like if social media and like cell phone pictures had been around during the atomic age when they were doing like atom bomb tests and stuff.
Uh-huh.
So it's showing like a public that's desensitized to explosions while putting all of these images online and sharing it via different social media, texting, all this other stuff.
That's really cool.
So this is this one like surfer guy looking at a giant explosion here. Children just kind of nonchalantly prancing around with a big mushroom cloud in mm-hmm. the distance. A couple kind of hugging and admiring the backdrop. And
huh.
So I just thought that was really interesting, and I wanted to share that. We don't necessarily need to spend a lot of time on this particular story in case... You know.
No, I thought that was really kind of cool because, one, I'm pretty fascinated by nukes. They're kind of they're an interesting weapon.
Mm-hmm. So I really like this kind of dichotomy that's going on. Like, you have a very tranquil scene of people just admiring a landscape combined with a really devastating, violent explosion going on. I really like that mixture of the two contrasting things. And that's kind of what drew me to this.
It almost makes me want to do that myself.
Yeah, I think you'd be good at it. I mean, you like playing around with explosions and artwork and stuff.
Photoshop. So. Yeah, I could. Yeah, I would. I almost feel like just should give it a shot.
Yeah, and these look really real too. Which
I need a. I do need a new Facebook picture.
That might be a good one.
Oh, that'd be cool. We could take one of my pictures and then just kind of
like want to look through like your vacation photos.
Yeah,
you can find a good one to.
I might do that.
I think you should. That would be a really cool Facebook profile pic. But yeah, anything else to add to that?
Is there more than just those like four?
I think he has a gallery.
Is there a link to it? Because I wouldn't mind seeing it. I mean, I can see it's kind of like, you know, from an artist standpoint, I can see some of them could have been maybe done a little better. But yeah. It is actually kind of a fascinating thing to see.
Yeah.
Because it's just kind of like, you know, what if you were on vacation and then
or
a nuke just goes off in the city like near you.
Yeah.
And you're kind of like,
what if they have like a planned nuclear demolition or something and you showed up to watch it? Like, how would that look?
Yeah.
And I'm looking through this guy's website and I'm not immediately finding more.
That's too bad.
But I'm sure there are more available out there.
He's made movies?
Yeah, it looks like he's done some music videos.
That's cool. Yeah.
So Luke, you want to show me your other story?
Yeah. Yeah. I'll go single next.
All right. Well, the article's a little longer, so it's
keeping our listeners busy on this episode.
Robert Russell found his own car stolen 42 years ago on eBay.
What?
A Texas man whose prized sports car was stolen 42 years ago recovered the vehicle in California after spotting it on eBay, authorities said Sunday. Robert Russell told the Los Angeles County Sheriff's officials that he had never given up searching for his 1967 Austin Healey after it was stolen from his Philadelphia home in 1970. The 66-year-old retired sales manager from Southlake told the Dallas Morning News he paid a friend $3,000 for the car. It had a sentimental value to him because it was stolen the morning after he took his future wife out on their second date. Russell said he spent years surfing the internet looking for the car and didn't have much hope finding it. The fact that the car still exists is improbable, and it could have been junked or wrecked. He
said he checked on eBay periodically and spotted it a few weeks ago. He immediately called a Beverly Hills car dealership that was selling it. He said the vehicle's identification number matched that of his own car. He had the original key and the car title, but not a copy of the stolen car report to prove that it was stolen from him.
Uh-huh.
Russell contacted Philadelphia police for help and learned that the stolen car report wasn't showing up on the FBI's National Crime Index because one vehicle identification number was entered incorrectly. The report was finally found and the file was reactivated, enabling Los Angeles authorities to impound the car. Russell and his wife, Cynthia, drove to Los Angeles and took possession of the car. It's now valued at $23,000. It still runs, but the brakes don't work well. We're going to put it back the way it was.
So they gave it back to him, I hope?
Yeah, it's, they just said it. They drove out and got it.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah, man. I think I've seen things like that before. Where...
That's, like, crazy, though. Like, how long was it before he found it? Like, 30-something years? 47 years?
42.
And he's been pretty much working tirelessly to try to recover it? I mean, that's... You gotta wonder if it's worth the time and effort he put into that.
It was stolen before the age of the internet. So, like... Yeah. And then the part of the age of the internet when, like, you could... find your car on the internet wasn't until like 10 years after the internet even started.
I'm assuming that they didn't find who originally stole it because it's probably passed hands a couple
probably
times.
Probably not, but it's like crazy lucky that that happened.
Yeah, that's really something.
It's a good thing he wrote down his VIN numbers. I'm like, well, it must be on his...
I think it's on your, on like, your registration, maybe?
It's got to be on your title.
Oh, yeah, probably on there.
Yeah. So probably he just had, he said he had the title of the car and
okay.
Probably just kept looking at the VIN number until they found it. But you got doing that for 42 years?
That's some crazy dedication right there. I don't know if I would keep up the hunt that long.
But it's kind of a testament to like how it's getting harder to get away with certain crimes.
It's getting harder to get away with everything.
Yeah. I mean like...
I mean with the age of the internet, that's like taken away a lot of anonymity. And with like all the forensics and DNA stuff, it makes it harder to get away with like pretty much any crime now.
And so, and like you can't, even like large corporations are even having problems because if you now, like when you piss off your customer base, like there's, they can just ruin your image on the internet.
Oh, yeah.
Really easily. So now almost like some people are able to be held to a certain standard.
People and companies, as we're seeing with Chick-fil-A and...
That thing. No, don't even go there. I don't want to talk about
that. We had an interesting conversation about that the other day.
With who?
We talked about that.
When did we talk about that?
When we went to the mall.
I don't have any memory of
this. We talked about the Chick-fil-A thing. We were in the food court.
Maybe I vaguely remember that.
Okay.
I think we were just thinking of that either side. Oh, yeah, that's right. It's like both sides. Which is...
Yes. Just overblown, and this era of social media is making it hard to say anything without repercussions.
Then you think about like Mass Effect 3.
Oh, with like the ending or?
Yeah, there's almost like this new thing. This has gone now like crazy off topic. But I guess there's a connection between him. Yeah. Now the internet has allowed this guy to find his car. It's when if it had never came about, he probably never would have found his car.
Right. This is still relevant. I mean, we're talking about the power of the internet.
But it was in like a Cracked article I remember reading. And something about maybe how like the way things are now.
Yeah.
That because of like the internet and how people can hold artists and companies accountable for the work that they do, like now people who make things can't just put out like I think one good example they had was when they started doing albums, if a band made one good song and you wanted that song, you still had to buy like the $20 album with all the other songs on it.
Yeah.
But then it comes along like iTunes where you can just pick one song. Like you don't have to get all the songs on the CD. You can just get the ones you want, which means that artists now are held to a standard where they have to...
have more consistent quality on their...
They have to make good quality all the time instead of half-assing it in order to... get the sales that they had before. So, and but then that goes for like movies, video games.
Yeah.
So that's...
Well, it's like a double-edged sword because there's an unprecedented level of accountability for like what artists and creators are putting out now.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not always necessarily a good thing. Like with the Mass Effect 3 ending, I mean, yeah, it kind of sucked, but like BioWare had the, in my opinion, freedom to end things as they chose.
Yeah.
So, but...
Although I guess that does, but then they probably will now be even more careful with how they maybe portray the next one. But, you know, you can never tell. But there is, like, one downside, like, with Kickstarter. So far, it's been really good at, like, getting these great projects going. But I can see maybe some instance in the future where there will be something where a whole bunch of people donate money to it.
Yep.
And then the final product will be crap.
Right.
And the person who did it will get sued.
Hmm. I can definitely see that happening.
Yeah.
Because you can't please everybody.
Yeah.
And there's got to be some instances. And Kickstarter is still, like, relatively new, so we haven't seen, like, a lot of large-scale projects born out of that come to fruition. So we just kind of have to wait and see.
I mean, luckily, so far, they've all worked out.
Yeah.
But
it's not going to continue. Because here's the thing with Kickstarter. It basically gives you the chance to be part of the project. So when you donate money to something, you want to see it end up the way that you want it. So it gives you like an unprecedented level of self-entitlement when it comes to these things being made.
Right.
So that has a chance
to... So that has a chance of backfiring. So that's something... So you got to be careful. You can't just be like, oh, this is free money to do the project I want to do. You better make something damn good or you're going to have an issue on your hands.
Right.
So.
Well, I always make sure before I've donated to two different Kickstarter projects. And for both of them, I made sure it would be something that I had a genuine interest in both the product that they were making and in the developers behind it.
Yeah, like my first donation was to the Intergalactic Nemesis' second book. And I donated money for that because I saw their first show. It was awesome. And I knew that the next one was probably going to be just as good. So I donated to that. I was big fans. And now I have tickets to the show and all that. So, and then you and I have donated to that Ouya thing.
Yeah.
So, and it was only like $100. So it wasn't like...
Yeah. Worst case scenario, you get, you know, a version of the console that would have been $100 anyway. So.
And then so far, it's...
Ouya like seems to be shaping up.
Yeah. That was a good discussion.
You want to move on to my last thing? Because we're taking up a lot of time.
Yeah, we only got 5 minutes left.
So uh-oh.
Let's do that.
I am going to try to make this quick.
Oh, I forgot what... what was my last... I forget. Just click on the tab where my last one I wanted to...
HuffPost.
Oh, it was HuffPost also?
This... It's weird. On this dailymail.co.uk, it's like a British news source, but a lot of the stories I find on there and use for this show are like domestically based, like in the US. It's kind of funny.
Huh. It's probably just another aggregator.
Yeah. Now, this is awesome. It's about this guy. Title is called Holy Obsession Batman.
Did he make...
Dark Knight superfan spends $2 million creating home cinema replica of Bruce Wayne.
Are you kidding me?
And this looks freaking awesome. Basically, some rich guy, doesn't disclose who because it's a private guy, and he's having it done by some firm. He's having a $2 million Batcave that's like an exclusive, awesome-looking home cinema, and it's like the ultimate testament to Batman fandom. Get a load of this.
That is awesome.
If you had $2 million to blow, I think you'd spend it on this. So would I. It's 12,000 square feet, and the installation, I'm taking this verbatim from the article, the installation includes a separate study, which is the entrance to a hidden cinema.
That's awesome.
The study, complete with a stately grandfather clock, is flanked by bookshelves upon which sits a bust of William Shakespeare. A clockwise turn of the writer's head makes the grandfather clock swing and open to reveal the elevator doors. And then there's a real fingerprint scanner that gets you access to an elevator.
That is awesome.
You step into the cylindrical stainless steel elevator, and there's a glowing bat symbol that pulsates at the bottom of the button panel. And to the left of the symbol is the letter B that stands for Batcave. And then the elevator descends, and then there's floor-to-ceiling mirrors on either side that come alive and show you, like, body scanning graphics.
Uh-huh.
And then when you reach the bottom, a robotic female voice states on the intercom system, security clearance granted. And then the elevator doors slide open. There's a subterranean Batcave home theater with a backlit, highly detailed, life-size bat suit standing at attention across the room, and there's six bat suits around. There's Art Deco-inspired architecture and Gothic pieces and stuff. There's a 180-inch film screen, which is huge. And then there's various bookcases.
Those seats look comfy.
Yeah. They're like race car seat-inspired. And there's also a mock escape tunnel.
So you could get out in case...
No, it's not like a real escape tunnel. It goes in like 30 feet or something. But
I would have made that an actual escape tunnel because being underground. Awesome.
I mean, yeah, you're spending $2 million.
The only way out is an elevator. You might want to.
May as well fork over another $50,000 or whatever. But some chief executive at this company that's constructing it said that the Dark Knight themed custom home theater was actually a design concept we did for free for one of our previous clients, and it looks awesome. It's estimated to be completed in November 2012.
I've seen some really awesome looking home theaters. I mean, that takes
the cake.
Probably one of the top I've ever seen. Like, if I had like crap tons of money, I mean,
like,
I personally...
Why wouldn't you have something like this done? This is awesome.
Like, personally, like, I wouldn't want too much of a fancy house, you know, to be honest. I could say I would prefer just to live on, like, a lake.
Yeah.
But one thing that I would have really tempted to do is have a crazy cool home theater like that. I mean, because I love movies, I love media, and if I could have... You know, an awesome room, maybe even make it secret like that, where I can just watch movies and my own big screen, or even play video games in there. You know, imagine the LAN party you could have.
Oh my God.
It's just...
Like, the possibilities is just crazy. I mean, one drawback is your friends would always be bugging you to get in the Batcave, probably.
And I'd be like, okay, sure. Depending on what friends, you know,
my
closest, I'd be like, sure, come over.
Yeah, it's just awesome.
But I'd probably be having, like, movie nights, like,
every month. At least once a week with me. I mean,
yeah, man.
With a theater like that, I mean, you got to put your $2 million to use.
I might even, like, host, like, open screenings and stuff for, like, local artists and stuff. That'd be awesome.
Or, like, with, like, thinking to our...
You can finish your sentence.
But, yeah, just, like, final thought with, like, our filmmaking that we do on the side, we could do, like... private opening nights and that kind of thing, which would be awesome.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just wanted to share that because pretty cool fan thing.
Yeah, man. So
brings us to a close.
So we had a good show. Some great discussion. Yeah, actually got some off topic or good.
Definitely one of
good talk. Yeah. Yeah. So
Email us your thoughts and feedback and any weird stories you come across.
Yes. If you would like to find this podcast and others, go to psychojellyfish.com. You can also find us at facebook.com/psychojellyfish. You can also find us on Twitter at Jellycast. And send us your emails with your thoughts and concerns to email at psychojellyfish.com. So thanks, folks, for all your listening-ness.
Thanks for tuning in. Join us next time.
Here on Flap Doodle Forum.